You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 43 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, so things like moves and choreographies and combinations, there are a lot of resources out there to help you. But if you want help with the why and the how, so things like musicality, culture, composition, business, professionalism, interacting with people, all of those things can be a little bit harder to find. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different topic, and we always have time for questions and answers so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest tonight is Lisa Allred. Lisa is a professional ATS belly dancer and a licensed clinical social worker. In addition to her role as the director of curriculum development with the Belly Dance Business Academy, she serves as the assistant director of Dianissima and also dances professionally with Terry Allred and Third Eye Tribal. Lisa combines her 25 years experience working with children, families, communities, and nonprofits with her love of belly dance to create meaningful and relevant classes for other dancers. If you'd like to learn more from her, you can check her out at bellydancebusinessacademy.teachable.com. And to get to her specifics, you go to that website and add /courses/communication-during-conflict/author_bio. And if that's a little too long to type, just head over to bellydancebusinessacademy.com and you can find her there. So today, Lisa's going to talk about dealing with difficult people in your dance life, or in your real life for that matter. So let's jump right in. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. I'm absolutely in love with this topic. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started in belly dance?
Okay. Well, I got started, actually it's my twin sister Terry who kind of drugged me into it. She had started taking classes and just loved it, and she got me started, and then after a couple of years, she had been living in North Carolina, and she moved to Minnesota, and she needed someone to take over her children's belly dance classes. So at that, and her troupe that was called Happy Hips. So at that point, I really took it up a notch and started taking several classes a week. And that's when I stumbled across ATS and started taking ATS with the director of Dianissima, the professional troupe that I'm in now, or one of them, Don Rucker. And I just have been doing it ever since then. It's been about 10 years since I started. And I enjoy not just teaching dance. I teach at a local studio called World in Motion Dance in Morrisville, North Carolina, and I do parent-child workshops and kids workshops, and I was a child therapist for many years. It was kind of one of the populations that I specialized in, so I really have a special place in my heart for the short people and dancing with them.
Wonderful. And tell us more about your background in working with difficult people specifically. What made you offer us this topic?
Well, I think one of the things that people struggle with so much in their everyday life is how do you deal with confrontation, disagreements, difficult people in a way that you feel good about it, that doesn't cause too much anxiety, and that you know, can have positive resolution and a positive outcome. So like you said in the introduction, I am a clinical social worker, which for social work means you're trained also to be a therapist. A lot of times when people think of social workers, they think of more case management stuff. But so I'm a trained therapist, and my specialty was all around trauma and abuse. Specifically sexual assault, domestic violence, or intimate partner violence, and child sexual abuse. So I've worked with domestic violence offenders. I've worked a lot with people in crisis. And oftentimes people in crisis are people who are difficult to deal with because they're not thinking clearly. They're very panicked. So that's kind of originally why I started getting interested in this topic. And then eventually I moved out of doing the direct therapy and started running nonprofits and dealing with staff issues and client complaints and funders and risk management committees. And you know, so just I had a lot of interactions with difficult people and feel like I've come up with some really good ways for myself that works to deal with them and to have positive outcomes.
Now, if we take a look at this from the very beginning, you know, what is it that makes a person or a situation difficult? You know, how do we know when something is difficult
Right.
versus just a little uncomfortable?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's funny because it is a little bit subjective. It's a little bit about each individual person. So sometimes a person or situation is difficult because I'll just talk about people. They are challenging our normal strategies for communication, like what we normally would do to resolve conflict or to deal with difficult situations. It's not working what we would normally do. Sometimes they're difficult because they remind us of someone or they remind us of a previous situation that didn't go as well as we hoped that it would. Sometimes people are difficult because they won't engage in any kind of resolution or communication. They just refuse to interact with us, and that can make them difficult. And the opposite can make them difficult when they'll interact, but not in a constructive way, more in a defensive, combative, or threatening way. So I think there's a lot of different ways to define a difficult person or a difficult situation. And the techniques we're going to talk about really are going to work in all of these cases.
Great. You know, and so, you know, if we feel like something isn't right in a situation, you know, how can we identify what the difficult behavior is?
Yeah, that's hard because what happens when we are in situations like this is sometimes it makes us feel threatened or anxious or kind of frozen and not really sure how to handle it. That's one of the things that can signal you that you are dealing with a difficult situation is if you're having emotions or reactions that make you feel like you're not managing well. But there's also behaviors that you can observe, and that's what we're going to talk about just a little bit later. And three of these behaviors are heightened emotions, harmful patterns, and I'll talk about what those patterns are, and defensiveness. So those are behaviors that occur when you are dealing with a difficult person.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we jump right in with heightened emotions? You know, what role do our emotions or the other person's emotions play in conflict and in other difficult situations?
Okay. So probably our first signal that heightened emotions are coming into play is when we feel anger and or discomfort, and that's really our early warning sign that something's wrong, that boundaries are being violated, that we need to pay attention to a situation. So anger isn't at all a bad thing to feel. Sometimes it's what lets us know that there's a problem. And then a lot of times, we have a default when we feel angry, like we have a default way of dealing with it or coping with it. I know for years, my default when I got angry was to just start crying. And then that made me even madder because then I felt like I couldn't even talk because I was getting so upset. So when your emotions do get heightened, the problem is there's a lot of research on effective communication that talks about how when you have these heightened emotions, you're less able to come up with solutions, you're less open to other people's perspectives, you're less creative. And so it's really important to recognize when your emotions are getting ramped up and do things to kind of calm yourself down so that you can be open to solutions and think better. You know, it's that adage that we always heard, or I always heard growing up about, you know, you need to sleep on it. Just sleep on it, and then, you know, things will be clearer in the morning. But now there's all this scientific evidence that would demonstrate that, yeah, that's true. You really do have to calm down before you're able to problem solve in a really constructive way.
Mm. And, what kinds of ways do those ramped out emotions play out in people? Are there any symptoms or experiences that people should watch out for if they're trying to understand their own anger responses?
Yes, that's a great question. So, there are the physical responses, and there are things that you can feel in yourself, or things that you can look for that would be more behavioral in other people. So, the physical symptoms in yourself, we're all different, but it can look like your heart starts racing, you feel like there's a pit in your stomach, you just feel a little nauseous and queasy, your muscles are tense, particularly areas that you carry stress, like if it's your shoulders or your neck or your stomach, that'll get really tense. And then we talked about the mental symptoms a little bit a minute ago. You get overwhelmed, you can't think clearly, you may kind of freeze. And then the things that you can look at for other people that this kind of thing is happening to them are things that are observable. Sometimes people pace, or their voice becomes loud, or their speech becomes rapid or very pressured. Like, they kind of don't come up for air. They just talk, 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 talk. Sometimes you can see jaws clenching or fists clenching when somebody's getting really upset. And so those are different signs you can look for in yourself and in other people.
And I feel like in our culture there's this kind of delicate dance between, not shutting w w between respecting somebody else's emotions and not letting them completely control the interaction. Do you have any suggestions on how to find the balance between honoring somebody else's emotions without letting them violate your boundaries?
And that's tough. It's tough because, if you have a history with the person and what the patterns are, and or if it's the first time you're having a conflict with somebody, there's all kinds of things to take into consideration. But I guess a few things that I would suggest is, we ultimately can't control somebody else, but we can show respect and acknowledge their point of view before you offer your own. And you can also, let them know, like just during the conversation, when it seems like the control is being wrenched away, or like you kind of are losing ground, you can say that, it's okay for us not to agree, but I'd still prefer for us to be able to hear each other and to support the fact that we have feelings, even if we don't agree with the feelings. A way to handle when someone else is taking control is to stay focused on yourself, talk about what you feel rather than what they should feel or what they should be doing. And then ultimately, if the strategies that you're trying don't work, it's okay to say, hey, I really, this is not going well, and so I'd like to take a break, and let's get back together tomorrow, and once we have or 30 minutes from now. You don't want to get back together any less than 30 minutes, because it really takes you physiologically that long to calm down. But to say to the other person, we need to regroup at a later time. Let's plan to talk again in an hour, plan to talk again in the morning. Because sometimes you get to the point where both of you just are, you're just not going to be able to make much progress. It's just not a moment that you're going to be able to break through and find any kind of compromise that's going to work. Is that helpful? Is that what you meant?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
And are
good.
there any other like de-escalation techniques that you can recommend, or are your main suggestions, acknowledging their feelings and taking breaks when you need to?
Well, there's some other good ideas of things that you can do. So sometimes you realize things are going in that direction, but they're not at the point where you feel like you have to call it or say, let's take a break yet. And what you can do then is you can do some things to actively engage in ways to calm yourself down. So you can focus on your breathing. You can have what we say in the world of cognitive behavioral therapy. You can focus on calming thoughts or cool thoughts. So instead of, you know, that jerk, he always brings up, you know, his mother when we're fighting about holidays. You know, you can change that thought around and think, well, you know, of course, we're all trying to balance the needs of our family and the needs of the relationship. And so it's inevitable that, you know, that my partner's going to talk about his mother or whatever, you know, just whatever the situation is. So calm thoughts are thoughts that that help you give the other person the benefit of the doubt, that acknowledge that, you know, there's some positive relationship context that you're in, versus hot thoughts or agitating thoughts, which would be like flaming the fire, so to speak. You know, things that you would think of that would make you even madder that may or may not be true. I mean, the calm thoughts may or may not be true either, but it's part of like giving somebody the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm.
Well, it also sounds like, you know, when you're doing your calm versus hot thoughts, in addition to giving the other person, you know, the kindness of the benefit of the doubt, it sounds like you're also helping yourself get to a calmer and more powerful place to deal with them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And those things would be good for when you're not at the point that you need to take a break. You know, also when you're escalating, you can do things, and this is a real therapist technique, calming your voice and softening your tone. Teachers are great at this, like when the class gets unruly and they'll just start talking in a very calm, soft voice, and everybody like gets quiet so they can hear. But that's a strategy you can use in a heated conversation too, is just start, you know, taking deep breaths and calming yourself. If you find that your relation to the other person is, you know, very close or your stance is threatening in any way, you can back off both physically and verbally. Another great way to de-escalate a situation is to apologize for your part in whatever is going on. And I'm not saying apologize for things that you didn't do or apologize for the whole situation, but any responsibility you could take for any piece of the disagreement can tend to de-escalate things. And then sometimes, this is silly, but it's called a de-escalating gesture. It's basically something that you can do to kind of remind the person that you care about them. Offer them a drink, you know, ask them about the temperature, you know, touch their arm, just anything that like is connecting with them and saying we have a relationship outside of this argument or right outside of this conversation that we're having.
You know, I've never thought to do that before, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
well,
just
can
imagine
really break that,
in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I remember, and this is, you know, thinking back on my life, one of the like earliest big impacts on who I became as a person was I went to a Montessori school from age 3 to 13. And I remember that one of the big things that they focused on was that the behavior is not the person. Right.
Yeah.
And so they were very big on, you know, saying that that behavior is not okay, but that you as a child are not bad, which is great because
right.
I was the smart kid, but I was also the hyperactive kid. And
yeah.
So, you know, that kind of separation between this behavior is not okay, but you are still a good person made
right.
it comfortable and safe for me to accept criticism and correction. And I
yeah,
feel like that's a
yeah.
really natural way of creating that in the context of a conflict is to, you know, have this, I still respect and possibly love you as a person, but we need to chill this
right.
conversation out a little bit and get more constructive.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we can do that as adults with our language, just like, you know, your teachers did it. And that's a great example. We can, instead of saying, you always forget to take the trash out, I always have to remind you, we can say, when you forget to take the trash out, it makes me feel upset because I feel like I have to do extra work, so that you're criticizing the behavior, not the person. The person isn't a bad person or a stupid person or a thoughtless person. It's the behavior that you really want to focus on, not the, you're not condemning the person themselves.
All right. Well, I've got lots of questions for you about harmful patterns, but was there anything else that you wanted to say about heightened emotions that I didn't ask you about?
Let me see. I think the only thing that I wanted to talk to or wanted to say about the heightened emotions is just to make sure that you're thinking about your role in whatever's going on and thinking through, what were your intentions that led to this conflict? What do you think their intentions were? How do you feel about what's going on? Does it remind you of anything in the past? Sometimes a signal for me, if I'm responding really emotionally to something that shouldn't be that big of a deal, is it kind of triggers me to think about, okay, is this a pattern for me? Is this something that's happened before? Is this like hooking me in some way? Just to think of an example, in dating and in relationships, we're like that. I went on a first date just this past weekend, and he said something similar to something my ex-husband would have said, and I'm like, ah! But like it had nothing to do with him. It hooked me because it was a similar topic. So, to be aware of those things and to have some insight when you're going into a difficult situation or a difficult conversation, to know what you're carrying into it and be able to recognize that and back yourself down before you go there.
Well, that raises kind of a tricky question too, because, I feel like any kind of interaction or relationship is a dance, right? It takes two partners
Oh,
to make
yeah.
it happen. But at the same time, I feel like women in particular are socialized to take on all the responsibility for anything that
Yes.
happens and to blame themselves for everything. Do you have any suggestions for people on how to, get a more realistic sense of what their role is without taking on the problems of the world and taking on responsibility for other people's behavior?
Yes, and that is such a big,
I know, we could have another call on this.
I mean, socialization and all of that is, golly, yes, and we could have a whole other call on that. So let me think about, okay, let's try this. I'm such an external processor. I may say it and then be like, oh, wait, no, that doesn't work, but let me
That
go
works
for
for
it.
me.
Communication is a two-way street. You are responsible for what you say. You're not responsible for what the other person hears. Now you can increase the message, the likelihood that the message is going to be received in the way you intended it by being very explicit about that. And this is that I'm sure everybody's heard, kind of the marriage therapy technique of, the marriage therapist makes you say something and then the other person has to repeat back what they heard you say. And that sounds silly, but it's really important because sometimes we don't hear what people intend or their word choice is not a word choice that we would use. So anyway, to come back to the original question, which is how can women, for example, not take responsibility, I think it's developing that understanding that only 50% of this is you. You can communicate accurately and clearly, but you can't control how it's received. And you can get communication and hear it, and then you do have a little bit more control because you can say, hey, this is what I'm hearing is am I hearing you right? Is this what you meant? Am I exaggerating something? Am I minimizing something? Like, tell me if this is what you meant to say. And then when you do things like that and you model that behavior, that's a great way of getting your partner to do the same, to model that behavior, particularly if when you are modeling that behavior of that reflective listening, that your partner feels really heard and understood. So I think I like that answer.
I do too. I like that a lot too. And you know, if like you wake up in the middle of the night and you think of some more stuff, we can move over to the Facebook group and talk more. But I really do think there's another call in this. So let's talk in another 6 months of the year.
Oh yeah, it's just a super complicated subject, and yeah, but one that I'm very interested in. Very, very interested in.
Awesome. Well, why don't we start talking about harmful patterns? You know, when we think about encountering a difficult person or a difficult situation, you know, what are some of the types of harmful patterns that tend to play out?
You know, this topic comes from a communication class that I have at the Belly Dance Business Academy. And this is just a section of the class that we're talking about tonight. But in the class, I talk about the two harmful patterns of communication, just because you have to focus in on something. One is escalation, and we've done a really good job on going over how to de-escalate and some particular strategies. And So that's one, is the whole issue of escalation. Another is invalidation, and basically you're invalidating someone else if you are denying that what they're saying has value. And that's a really nothing makes someone angry or hurt like feeling like they're not being heard or they're not being validated or they're being dismissed. And so the invalidation is an important pattern to be able to recognize when you're doing it to someone else or when someone's doing it to you. So how to make sure that you're not invalidating someone else. A big piece of that is going into the conversation with a curious attitude. A lot of times we go into conversations, particularly difficult conversations, feeling like we already have the answer. We already have the resolution. We already understand why the person did what they did. And, you know, we're just kind of, it's pro forma. We have to have this conversation with them. We're not really going in curious, wanting to know how they experienced the situation or wanting to know what their intention was. You know, a huge way not to invalidate someone is to go in curious. Make sure that when they're talking, when the other person's talking, that you're actually listening to them and not, you know, coming up with what you're going to say next. One of the techniques that I use to make sure that's happening is if I'm having a difficult conversation, I'll have a piece of paper and a pen beside me. So if I think of something that I want to say, I can just jot it down really quickly. And then I don't have to focus on remembering it, because if you're focused on remembering it, then you're not actually listening to what the person's saying. Then to go a little bit further to make sure that you're not invalidating someone else, you can do that technique I was talking about a minute ago, that restating what you heard and checking to see if it's actually what they meant. So that's handling invalidation if you're the one that you may be doing it. But what if somebody's invalidating you? And then we loop all the way back to our male-female dynamic gender stereotype stuff. And that's when I think it's a really good good time to say something that I mentioned earlier in the call, which is, I want you to hear my point of view, even if you don't agree with it. Like, I understand that you don't agree with me, but it's still important for me to be able to say what I have to say. And that may not ultimately change the outcome of anything, but at least you're asking for that situation where you're being heard, you're being listened to. So the escalation and the invalidation are two of the harmful patterns that I talk about in this class.
Now, one thing that I have noticed in my own experience is that, not so much escalation, but with invalidation, sometimes I don't realize it's happening, even in both directions. Sometimes it happens kind of subtly or quietly. And again, in that male-female dynamic, sometimes it's like it starts off really light and insidious. Do you have any suggestions for recognizing when that might be happening?
I think that there's some words that ought to flag us, like the yes, but. And then there's some speech patterns that ought to flag us, like interrupting, body language that would kind of shut us up, like turning your body away from someone, or holding your hand up, or so anything that attempts to silence you before you're done talking. So whether that be a body language gesture that attempts to silence you, or a change of subject, or just plain interrupting, those are all things that I would look for.
And, I'm sure this doesn't apply to everybody, but one thing that happened to me last week that I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on was I found myself feeling like I was going on too much. And I realized later that I was taking signals from the other person in that conversation because they'd had enough of hearing it. And so sometimes it's just super subtle.
Yes. And then you have to ask yourself, was I going on too much? Or, my grandmother's favorite expression, beating a dead horse. Were you beating a dead horse? Or was the other person being impatient? And it's a hard balance to know. Were you saying the same thing over and over again in different ways? Well, sometimes we do that because we're not being understood, or we're not being, we don't get any sign that we're being heard. And so, yeah, a any effort you can put towards making what's happening, the process, bringing that to awareness. And this is hard to do when you're in the middle of it, but being able to comment on what's happening, not just on, whatever argument you're in, but saying, I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over, but in different ways. And I guess I'm doing that because I guess I feel like you're just not hearing me. What's the point that you're hearing so I can stop talking, or something like that. But again, we're talking about kind of, you have to really be in a de-escalated emotional state so you can think that clearly. And that's hard to have happen when you're in a difficult conversation or a difficult situation.
All right. Well, I think this is a great time to move on to defensiveness, but was there anything else that you wanted to say about harmful patterns first?
I don't think so. If I think of it, I'll let you know. We can throw it back in.
All right. So, in terms of defensiveness, I feel like, this is one of those terms that everybody's been aware of, at least since I was a kid in the 90s. But, what is defensiveness exactly? So we're clear on what we're talking about.
Yeah, you're right. It's good to define the term so that everybody's on the same page. So the way I would define defensiveness is a behavior used to protect ourselves from a perceived threat or attack. So, and the behaviors can look different, and I'll tell you in a minute how you can recognize it. But when either person gets defensive, it almost always blocks the progress in a conversation. Because if you're defensive, it's back to that heightened emotional state where you can't empathize and you can't understand someone else's point of view. And it really inhibits your ability to resolve conflict when either person gets defensive. You want me to talk about how you recognize it?
Yes, please.
Great. So I think it can look two different ways. Sometimes defensiveness, and I think this is harder to think of as defensive But yet it very much that's what this is. So it's when you like completely shut down and withdraw. That would be like passive defensiveness. If you were looking at someone, you might recognize the physical signs of them crossing their legs, them rolling their eyes, frowning, yawning, turning away, picking up a magazine. not that that ever happened in a previous relationship. Refusing to speak, you know, that basically physically just, I'm done, I'm disengaging. Electronically, you don't have the body language to go on, but there's still, you know, I mean, we've all been ignored electronically or had someone disengage with us when we were in a difficult situation with someone online or on the phone or text or whatever. So one type of defensiveness is this passive shutdown or withdrawal. The other type is what we would more commonly think of, which is more of an aggressive defensiveness. Somebody blaming you or judging you or attacking you, or so it's very much directed at the other person. Like, I am feeling attacked, and so I'm going to attack you. I'm feeling threatened, so I'm going to turn this around and try to focus the blame or the responsibility on you. And the physical signs of that aggressive defensiveness are things like slamming doors, glaring, yelling, interrupting, name calling, rationalizing. I am only yelling because you made me so mad. It's not my fault. That kind of thing would be rationalizing. So that's how you recognize it.
And so, you know, if you realize that either you or the other person in this situation are getting defensive, you know, what are some of the ways that we can turn it around and make it more constructive?
Well, some of the ways are de-escalating, like we talked about earlier. And then another thing you can do is to, if it's you that's being defensive, you can label what's happening. You can say, hey, I just realized that I'm getting defensive. You know, I must be feeling threatened or I wouldn't be responding this way. So let me see if I can, you know, get myself calmed down a bit and reapproach this in a less defensive way. So you can do that if it's yourself. Again, that takes a whole lot of insight and practice. If it's the other person that's being defensive, nobody likes to be called defensive. So identifying what's going on is probably not going to be your most useful tactic at that point. But what you can do is acknowledge the fact that even if it's not being said directly, that the person is feeling attacked or threatened in some way. And so you can acknowledge that that this has turned into a conversation that doesn't feel safe for either of you. And is there something that you could do that is going to make the other person feel better? You know, our emotions are really heightened. You know, we're both feeling really on edge. You know, is there something that I could do that is going to help you feel better about where we are right now? Another way that you can help deal with that defensiveness is to ask open-ended questions, you know, showing that you're interested and that you want to hear what they have to say. And then
can you give
show
a few
that
examples
listening.
Of that?
Yeah. So say, for example, let's see, you're having a fight with, let's pick a child now instead of your spouse. You're having a fight with your child about them not studying for the test that they have tomorrow. And they're getting defensive because they had this and that and the other to do. And so so an open-ended question that you could ask would be something like, well, first acknowledging what's going on. You know, I understand that you're very stressed about this test tomorrow. What can I do to help you so that you can focus on studying. You know, and then if they say, I don't know, well, would it be helpful if I got your clothes together for tomorrow? Because then that would give you more time when you woke up in the morning to study, or, you know, so to help them problem solve too, but ask open-ended questions like that, like, what can I do to help, or what could I do to make you feel better, or you know, can we talk for a minute about this conversation in a larger context of our relationship, and, you know, that this is a disagreement, but that both of us are committed to handling it, and that it's okay to have disagreement. So anything you can do to get perspective.
Now, you know, I feel like another kind of stumbling block that people might run into when they're in that kind of situation is, you know, the fear that people are going to ask to answer that question by asking for something that you're not willing to give. You know, if you say, you know, how can I make you feel better about this? How can I make this situation turn out better for you? You know, there's the fear that sometimes people are going to want something that, you know, is going to violate your boundaries or isn't going to work for you. Do you have any suggestions for either getting over that fear or making the offer in a way that feels safe to you?
That is such a great point. And I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, I can think about it. Times in my life that has backfired in exactly that way. So I think that one possibility is to make the offer in a less still open-ended, but maybe a less open-ended way. So, you know, something like, I know in the past, you know, you really feel better when you have a hot tea. You know, is there anything like that I can do for you now? You know, so that you're kind of limiting what you're saying you're willing to do. But then ultimately, if someone asks you to do something to make them feel better that you don't feel like you can do, it's also okay to say, you know, that doesn't feel comfortable for me right now. What about this? And offer another suggestion.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this is all so complicated, and so many things in the middle of the conversation can happen, and, you know, then you have your path laid out for how you're going to go into this and how you're going to, like, really set it up to succeed, and then you take a side turn, and then you're like, oh no, now what do I do? But every step that you take is going to give you more of a chance for the conversation to go well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, why don't we start talking about some of the specific ways that these things play out in the dance world in particular? You know, are there some common, like, difficult personalities or difficult situations that dancers in particular experience routinely?
Yes. And, you know, a lot of this comes from the consulting that I do and Terry does through the Belly Dance Business Academy. There's a coaching call that happens every month, and a lot of issues like this get brought up during the coaching call. So I've come up with a couple of categories and that, you know, just to give examples. But these are based on, the categories are based on things that we hear repeatedly from dancers in other communities and other settings. So
can I interrupt you for just a second?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to let my listeners know that I've been involved in the Belly Dance Business Academy since 2008, and it's a huge piece of why you're listening to me right now. So if you haven't checked it out, please do.
Great. So the first kind of common situation or personality is the know-it-all student, the student who corrects the instructor, who's ready to dance in the professional troupe after her second beginner session, who side teaches whether she knows what she's talking about or not. So it's that student that you don't want to dampen their enthusiasm, but you just feel like you could throttle them because they won't they won't let you be the teacher. And then the other example I thought we could talk about is kind of the community diva, the person in the belly dance community who doesn't play well with others, criticizes other teachers or dancers in front of students or troop members, won't allow her troop members or her students to take with other teachers. So those are two that I thought of that we could kind of talk through how we might begin a conversation or set a conversation up to succeed in those scenarios.
Yes, please.
Okay. So let's start with the student. So one of the things that I encourage people to do when they are faced with a scenario like this is to begin the conversation with what I call a soften start. So you basically are setting up the conversation to succeed before it ever occurs by doing a few things. One of the things that you're doing is you're finding a setting that would be conducive to having the conversation. So you're talking to somebody in private, you're suggesting a time that you get together. So for example, say we're talking about this student and we want to have this conversation with her about side teaching. Let's go for that. Let's go for the side teaching one. So what you might do is say something like, Susan, I have some thoughts that I want to talk with you about, and I'm wondering if after class we could go get a cup of coffee. So you're making sure that you're going to do it privately, you're going to do it at a time that you're not super busy, and that you're creating a setting that is going to make it more likely for this to succeed. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So then the next would be the third person story. And basically, that's describing the situation like a third person would. So taking the feelings out of it to some extent, just saying, last week in class, Betsy asked you to demonstrate a move. And you, excuse me, let me get a drink of water. And instead of referring Betsy to me, which is kind of our class guidelines, you took her off to the side and showed her how to do that move. And I want to talk to you about this and the impact that it has on my teaching. And then the next, so you're basically describing it just very factually. This is what happened. And then the next step would be to invite the other person to problem solve. And now we're back to having that curious orientation, wanting to hear things from their perspective. So you might say, Susan, I'd really like to hear how this, what the situation, I'd really like to hear about the situation from your perspective and, what was going on, what happened, what you were thinking, because I'd really like to understand where you're coming from. It could be that in the past, she has been in classes with more advanced dancers and has asked them questions when she needed help and has felt bad or neglected when they don't answer her. And so maybe she felt like since the person who asked her the question was a very brand new student, and even though she'd only had a couple of sessions, she may have felt like she was being mean if she didn't answer or if she redirected to the teacher. So, then you're starting to have a dialogue about why things happened. And then you also start to get some clarification on the other person's intention. And so it turns out maybe the student's intention was not to side teach or to undermine you, but just to be a good class member. So that is a time that you can share observations and talk about your class guidelines, but you've created an atmosphere now that because you've asked her to tell how she feels or what she thinks or both, she's going to be more open to hearing what you have to say now, rather than if you had just gone in with the, these are the class rules, you know these are the class rules, why are you violating the class rules, why are you undermining me? You know, you're going in much more open to hearing what she has to say. And then, you know, you can end the conversation with a request. Or you can have kind of a negotiated request. So your request is that she stop side teaching. Maybe her request is that you remind all the students in the class that it's really important for them to ask the teacher questions, and that you've instructed, you know, everyone in the class to refer to you so that then she doesn't feel bad. So that's taking us through a conversation and how it could play out if you set it up so that it's a win-win situation.
That sounds great. So, you know, how about this community diva issue?
Okay. So, yeah, this is a hard one. It's a hard one because in communities, actually, I'm very, very fortunate in my dance community that this isn't so much of a problem. But in other dance communities that I hear about, one of the difficulties with talking to the community diva is, unlike the student who has some investment in the relationship, the community diva may not have an investment in the relationship with you. So that's when kind of the setting and the soften start is going to be a particularly critical piece of this going well. And so you may want to handle that by extending an invitation to the community diva to meet for coffee, to just talk about the general state of belly dance in your community and how, you know, maybe y'all could develop a relationship with each other that would benefit the whole community. And, you know, if the person accepts, great. They may not accept. We're back to the, you can't control other people. You can only control yourself. But let's say since we're doing this communications, let's say they accept and you get there and they are there, but they are displaying all of that defensive body language. Their arms are crossed, they're withdrawn, they're given short answers. You know, you can just tell that she's come to the table, but she is not happy about it. And she is defensive and she is ready to go. So what I would do first is I would try to, I try to use some of those techniques to de-escalate her defensiveness. So, you know, maybe ask her some questions about what being part of this community is like for her, or what are things that she hopes for, like what are her dreams for the community, or basically so that you're demonstrating that you're just not there to school her on something, that you're there to get to know her. And of course, that's the attitude you have to go into it with. And then you can have the invitation to problem solve, where, you know, well, what problems or concerns do you have about our community? Well, here's the ones that I have. And so then you can move into that phase of the conversation, hopefully with someone who's a little bit more open to having the conversation with you. So that's how I'd go about that one.
All right. Yeah, this may also be a tricky question, but, you know, I feel like sometimes when we're in a conflict situation, the context or the power dynamics have a big influence on our response. So sometimes it's somebody that you have a close relationship and is your equal, like a classmate or a troop mate,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes it's somebody in a different hierarchy, like your student who's, you know, not bowed beneath you, but, you know, someone that you are in a position
right.
of responsibility towards. Or the opposite,
yeah.
It's your teacher who, you know, you kind of look up to, or it's somebody who's technically your equal, but you're not close to, like another performer in your community that, wasn't one of your classmates. Or
Right,
even people
yeah.
like a customer where you're the service provider and they're the one paying you money. Do you have any suggestions on
Yeah.
how to deal with those differing power dynamics?
Yes. Everything we're talking about tonight is so complicated. And I really, really feel for, I belly dance as a hobby. It's not my full-time job. And I really feel for my dance sisters who have to depend on dance for a living, because it does change the dynamics and how you handle students and how you handle certain situations, because you're more thinking about customer service than you are necessarily an interpersonal conflict. I mean, not that, people who do it for a hobby aren't thinking about it as customer service. When I go teach my class Wednesday night, I certainly am providing a service. It just creates all these layers of complexity. So, yeah, there's actually all this literature about power differentials in the workplace and feedback, and how you're most likely to be successful in giving feedback to someone who's in a position of authority over you. And a lot of it has to do with making sure that your comments and thoughts are very well thought out and very logical, and can be kind of demonstrated. And I don't know how that really translates to a dance environment. I think you have to ask the person, or what I tend to do is ask the person for permission to give feedback. I have some feedback. I'm talking about, if you're approaching someone who has more power than you, because they're your teacher, their status in the community, or whatever. And so to say to them, I have some feedback I'd like to share with you, but I'm always really careful about when I give unsolicited feedback, because sometimes people don't appreciate it. And so, I have some thoughts on the way this conference was organized, and I have some things that I think might help make it better, but I also understand if you are not in a place where you want to hear about that, because the conference ended yesterday, or because, you're exhausted, or because you've been dealing with people complaining for the whole week. Part of it is to get the person to let you know if they're open to hearing what you have to say. So that's kind of the way I'd approach it with someone with more power. Equal or less power, I think less people with less power, sometimes I am concerned that teachers don't realize some of the adoration that students have for them. Like I see sometimes people not realizing that, their students really look up to them, and a harsh word from your teacher or a criticism can really devastate a student, even adult students. And so for someone that you have more power than, I think it's important to recognize that if you are a teacher and you are needing to talk to a student, that you do have more power than they do, and that they might be very sensitive to what you have to say, which is a great, great, great reason to go into it with that curious attitude. Hey, here's what I'm experiencing, but I really want to know what you're experiencing. You're a valuable student. I enjoy your being in class, but let's see if we can come up with a solution so that, everybody laughs at your jokes, but when you're making jokes the whole class, and it prevents me from getting the teaching in that I want to do. So I don't want you to stop being funny, but I also want everybody to learn what I have planned for the night. So let's talk about how we can work this out. I feel sure that if the two of us put our heads together, we can come up with a solution that will make sure class is still fun, but also that we get through all the content that I have. So framing it as a this is a mutual problem, so let's work on this together. A couple of other things that I'll say about context. One of the things that I always have to think through is this a relationship that I'm going to continue? So if it's a student, the answer is yes, you need to have the conversation. If you're at a dance workshop and it's, you know, the other side of the country, and it's not one that you go to all the time, and you know, you feel like the organizer was a little bit rude when you checked in, but, you know, she's stressed, and do you really need to say something? And, you know, you're probably never going to see her again, although that's not really true in the dance world. You see everybody again. but you know, sometimes it's okay to choose not to do something or not to say anything because you're not invested in the relationship. And so it's okay to just let it go. But if you're invested in a relationship or it is going to be an ongoing relationship, that's when I think it's better to probably address things to start out with when they're small than wait until they become really big and then you haven't said something and now it's become a big, huge thing and it's going to be even harder to say something. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing I want to say about that is that, you know, then there's the online stuff. And mm-hmm. do you respond to that negative online stuff? And there are people out there, there may be people out there on the call who know way more about online stuff than I do. But through my full-time job, I am involved in a social media training program at my company. And we just had a really interesting session on dealing with negative comments online. And this was, of course, in the context of things about the company, but it applies to us as belly dancers too. And one of the things that I just never really thought through before, and I'm sure social media people that are more savvy than I have, but you know, when you comment on something negative, it like Facebook, because I think a lot of belly dancers are on Facebook. So you comment on something negative, and it just pulls it to the top of everybody's feed. And so, you know, the people at work were talking about how the social media listening team at my company were talking about how, you know, that they'll be like, ignore. And then, you know, things will almost be drifted out of the feed where people are seeing it. And then someone will comment on it. And it's like, oh, no, don't do that. And so they were basically saying that, you know, if someone puts a negative comment online and you cannot respond to it, then sometimes that's the right answer. Or to say, hey, I'm going to message you, I'm going to PM you or private message you so we can talk about this. So that's another way you can respond to it without kind of airing your conflict process on Facebook, but you're still letting people know who, in terms of your reputation, that you're handling it, you're just going to take it offline. So those are just some thoughts about that, because that makes things even more complicated when the conflict's happening and it's happening on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So that was a long answer to a short question.
Those are usually the best.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, if we think from this, you know, context of the power differential, you know, how can leaders in the community, like teachers and troop directors, et cetera, you know, help prevent harmful patterns and promote more healthy interactions, mm-hmm. which is not to say avoiding mm-hmm. conflict, but, you know, help keep
yeah, right.
things in their classes and in the community happening in a healthy way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it takes courage to bring up issues that are difficult to talk about, but the more you bring them up in a kind and curious way, the more positive reinforcement you'll have and the easier it gets to do it too. Prevention though, so all of that to say, to discuss things as they happen so they won't become bigger, you know, like I just said. But then I'm a firm believer in prevention as well. I think that teachers should have class guidelines and troops should have guidelines. I mean, our troop guidelines are, they're at least 5 pages, because we talk about what, not just what the expectations are, but what you can expect from the teacher or the troop director, in this case, the troop director, if those expectations aren't being met. And that's where people, I think, fall short, is they'll create the guidelines, but they won't let people know what to expect if those guidelines aren't being met. One of the things that we did in our professional troop, what we do when we bring in new members, is we try to acculturate the members to our kind of really open feedback system before they even become full members into the troop. They start coming to practices before they start performing. They start, we're super big on dancing for each other and then fine-tuning stuff and giving each other critique. And, that's not the same as a difficult conversation, but you do have to be open to that. And that is kind of a skill to learn, like how to accept that and how to appreciate it, that kind of feedback. And so we just do things around that and around time expectations. And then everybody knows if you don't follow through, the first thing that happens is the new member liaison is going to sit down and have a conversation with you. And then the next thing that happens is the troop director and the assistant troop director are going to meet with you and, come up with some strategies to get you kind of falling in line. And then the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to be asked to leave the troop. So having those guidelines, making sure they include what happens if the guidelines aren't met, and then enforcing them consistently. It's so much easier to deal with problems when you deal with the same problem the same way every single time, because then people don't think you're picking on them, or they don't think you have some kind of personal agenda. Because they see someone talking in class and being disruptive, and then, they don't see you having the conversation with them, but they see it stopping, So you can point towards that these are guidelines that are reinforced across the board and that are consistent for everybody. The rules apply to everybody. And, for us, we all sign our troop guidelines. So basically, it's not just this is what the troop says you have to do, but you have to acknowledge that you've gotten the guidelines and that you agree with them and that that's part of being in the troop. So those are ideas.
Now, what about folks who are not in a leadership position? So students, troop members, other dance community members, what can they do when they're not in a position of power to help promote healthier patterns and interactions?
That's a great question. So much of our behavior is learned through other people, even as adults. And so it usually, well, I mean, this is actually true. This is why I taught a group therapy class this summer. And this is why, like, group therapy is such a powerful thing, is because when one person changes, you said earlier, the dance steps, a relationship is like a dance. So if one person changes the steps, then just by the process, it has to throw everybody off, and throw them off not in a bad way. So one person coming into a group and communicating very directly and displaying curiosity when there's a conflict and giving people the benefit of the doubt, and it can change the dynamics of a whole group of people. So you can really have a huge impact. And this is actually one of the things that we say in terms of our communications class. Yes, it's great if you're in a group and everybody gets the same material and then you have a common vocabulary, but that's not always practical. And so just you making changes in the way you interact can impact the way a group interacts. Another, and this is always my role because I'm the social worker. So no matter what group I'm in, no matter where I am, but a lot of times what I do is I'll just bring the process to the attention of everybody, and I'll say, I'm noticing that when conflict comes up, it's really hard for us to deal with it. I think we ought to take a moment and Spend some time talking about how we feel right now because so and so brought this topic up that makes us all uncomfortable. We don't have to resolve it, but if we're going to function in a healthy way, we do have to be able to talk about it. So sometimes you can get away with doing that. Sometimes when you're a social worker, everybody's used to you doing that, so you might get an eye roll, but that's it's about as bad as it gets. But you really can have a lot of impact in a group dynamic just by your words and actions.
And do you feel like there are any, situations or behaviors that really can't be dealt with in a reasonable way and really call for cutting off contact entirely?
Unfortunately, yes. I think what we hear the most from folks is the dance teacher who lets the difficult student continue too long to the point where they start losing other students. So in a situation like that, if you have, followed the soften start guidelines, you've really tried to take the person aside, approached him or her with a curious attitude, tried to problem solve together, referred to the policy. If you've done all of those things and the situation addressed has not changed at all, and it's either hurting your business because other students aren't coming, or it's just sucking the life out of you. It's just taking all the joy out of going to teach. Then I think it's time to have a conversation, and to say, this isn't going to work. This is, we've worked on this, we've tried, but from my perspective, this isn't going to work anymore. And that's a really hard conversation to have. I've had to do it, when I worked for nonprofits, I've had to fire volunteers. I've had to tell people, they couldn't come back and work for free. I've certainly had to fire people who were paid, which is no fun. And, in a dance situation, if you can offer them another alternative, that's a kind thing to do, but sometimes you can't. But I talked to one person about a situation, and they told the student that she couldn't come back to class, but they did offer to do private lessons. As a way to kind of stay in the dance world or, transition her through a time when she was having a real rough time emotionally and was having a hard time holding it together and saying that they would consider letting her come back. But ultimately, if someone can't maintain the decorum or the rules for the classroom, you're damaging other people's experience by letting them stay.
All right. Well, this has been so useful, but we have been at this for an hour and 17 minutes. Can you believe it?
How could that be?
It feels like 20
I
minutes. We get into good
know.
conversations. That's what happens. So, I would like to open up the call for questions and answers for our
Great.
listeners. But before we get
Okay.
started, if people take one thing away from this call, if there's one thing that they learn and remember and use, what would you want that thing to be?
The most important thing, the one thing that I think is the most important to take away is to approach conflict with a curious attitude, so that you're not going into things knowing already what the answer is, but that you're going into things very curiously. So I think that's the one piece of advice that I think is going to get you the farthest.
And if people want to learn more from you, how can they do that?
They can go to the Belly Dance Business Academy. They can take the full communication class. And like I said, this is a piece of the class. We start the class by assessing your communication style. There's a quiz that you take, and then that helps you determine your predominant mode of communicating. And there's all kinds of good information in the class, and this is just a little piece of it. And I talked about things not quite in the way that they're presented in the class. So, even the even the difficult people part of the class will have some new material in it for you. And then also, you know, if you have a specific situation, you've got a couple of options. You can join a coaching circle call for the Belly Dance Business Academy, or you can set up a private consult with me to talk through it, also through the Belly Dance Business Academy.
All right. So for anybody who's not familiar with that, that's at bellydancebusinessacademy.com. And I really do want to add one more plug. The BDBA is just wonderful. I've been involved in it for a really long time. And Lisa and Terry, you know, have really done really wonderful things for it in the last several months. So I hope you'll join up. I'm in there too. I'll say hi.
Well, I think another really important point is that a lot of the classes are free.
Yes.
And so many free classes, and it's not just for teachers or business owners. Like, I mean, I've got a class on gratitude. Like, anyone can benefit from that class, you know, and there's classes on how to take good digital pictures. I mean, it's just, there's all kinds of great stuff, and a whole lot of it is free.
And even the stuff that you're paying for, I mean, the prices are so reasonable. You know, I've taken a couple classes that were outside the BDBA, you know, in the like $2,000 to $4,000 range that I felt have been worth my money. But you can get things for like $20 and $40 in the BDBA that really, you know, pay off and give you things that you can use and apply right away. So, you know, if you want to make some progress in your business or other areas of your dance life, you know, jump right in and check it out because there's some really good stuff in there.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Yeah,
good. My pleasure. So we're going to jump right into some questions and answers. So if you are listening on the webcast, if your mic and speakers are attached, we can you can unmute yourself in the dashboard. But if you're not using your mic and speakers, you can also use the little question bubble on the right-hand side of your screen to type in a question. And if you're calling in by phone, you can press ** to unmute yourself. And if you're calling in by Skype, you can press ** on your Skype keypad, which is not the same thing as your keyboard, to unmute yourself. And we would love to hear from you. So if you've got questions about what you've learned or about any difficult people or situations that you'd like to ask for some feedback on, we would love to find out.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think we have anybody unmuting themselves. Oh, here we go. We've got a caller from Hawaii.
Oh, hi. I did have a question.
Hi there.
Great. I did have a question.
Yes, what's your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I've had a student, like when I'm in class, I like to check in with the students and see how they're feeling, see if they like the material I'm presenting. And I find that I don't get a response from them, or it takes a long time for me to get for them to get comfortable enough for them to give me the feedback. And then, you know, and then I get some students who say, well, if they don't like what you're doing, they just won't come back. So, like, what's the best way to get feedback from students about your material, and is it what they were expecting, or how to go forward?
That's a great question. So, you know, I've been touting all night the open-ended questions, but then what your example points out is that sometimes that doesn't work as well. You know, what do you like that's going on, or what do you not like? And then, you know, crickets, nothing, you don't hear anything. In that case, I would still go open-ended, but maybe a little bit narrower. So maybe something like, let's go around the room. I want everybody to tell me their favorite thing that they learned this session. The move the session that they like the least that we did, or, you know, and then you're creating, it's a low pressure question. You know, you're not asking them to tell you their most embarrassing moment or anything. Then you're creating a situation where everybody's going to answer, and you're going to actually get some of that information.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Right. You're welcome.
Thanks for your question.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and mute you. And if anybody else would like to ask a question, you can press ** to unmute yourself. All right. So Candace has a question. She says, if I have any suggestions on how to deal with someone who suffers from mental health issues, I'm finding it causes me a lot of anxiety worrying about how to tell them what they might have messed up or need to do something better without causing them an emotional breakdown. So I end up avoiding dealing with issues most of the time.
Okay, that's really, really a good question, and that comes up a whole lot. Maybe she can clarify in the chat whether it's mental health issues that you suspect or mental health issues that have been disclosed to you, because I think that you can take a slightly different tack. So if someone has disclosed a mental health issue to you, and this comes from my like teaching in a college sort of mindset, because I do teach a social work class at a local college, I would probably say, is there anything about your anxiety, about your depression, about your bipolar disorder that I need to know about, or any way that I need to treat you differently in this class? You know, are there any suggestions you have for me on making this class a positive experience for you? And I think you can go on to say that that you regularly give students feedback, ask the person, are they good with this? Are they not good with this? Because a lot of times people that have mental illness, they don't want to be treated differently than other people. Now, it could be a situation where you've tried to give feedback and there's been a reaction to it, or you suspect there's a mental health issue and there's not, but no one's told you. And so in a situation like that, I would probably make it be about the class. I do this in my classes. I say, you know, some people are in belly dance class because they want to meet people, they want to have fun, and they want to get a little bit of exercise. Other people are in belly dance class because they want to get better. They want to move from the beginning class to the intermediate class. They want to start dancing at Hofla's. You know, and I can respect all of the reasons that people come to class. If you're coming to class because you want to get better and you specifically want me to give you feedback, then let's talk about that. You know, if you're just coming to class to have fun, then yeah, that's fine too. So those are some ideas, and any other comments about helping me kind of clarify that down?
All right, Candace has added, anxiety and depression disclosed to me and others in our community and classes, and also okay. Our interactions are more one-on-one, but previous experience has made me hesitant to push too hard, but I can see a lot of potential in the person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in that case, particularly since she's been open about it, I think it, you know, and she's already in classes, have that, hey, can I talk to you after class? You know, just wondering how the class is going for you. You know, you shared about some of your struggles, and I just want to make sure that I'm creating the best environment for you. Are you getting enough feedback? Would you like more feedback? You know, I just want to do what I can to make this a positive experience for you, and you know, anything you can do to direct me on how to do that, I'd appreciate. And so that's one way that she can handle it.
And if I can add my own two cents with no counseling
Please.
Background whatsoever, you know,
okay.
One thing that my teacher used to, not harp on, but she mentioned several times when I was in teacher training, was that she said it for her, it was really hard to let go of, to use Candace's own words rather than my teacher's words, was the potential that she saw in her students when yeah. her goals for them didn't match their own goals for themselves, right?
Yeah.
What they wanted out of the, even though they, you know, could have had the potential to go pro, that wasn't really what they wanted out of the class. And so she,
yeah.
you know, really, you know, drilled it into us that just because somebody has a lot of potential doesn't mean that that's the best path for them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which is not to say that you should assume that that's not where they want to go.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. All right. And Candace says, that's really valuable. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking the question.
That was a really good question.
Yeah.
All right. If anybody else would like to ask a question, you can type it in the box on the right or press ** to unmute yourself. We would love to hear from you. And if folks don't have questions but just want to share their favorite thing that they learned, right? I think we just talked about that going around the circle, right? I've asked that before, but I love that you brought that up too. We would love to hear that too. All right, then I think we will call it a night. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun, and you know, I'm happy to chat with folks. They can send me an email through the Belly Dance Business Academy. It's lisa@bellydancebusinessacademy.com, or send me a message actually through the site, and I'm happy to answer folks' questions.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group going on over in the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. I'll be sending out an email shortly with an invitation to that group. There is an approval delay. It is a private group so that we keep it a safer space for dancers. So if you haven't been in there before, just be prepared. It might take me a day or two to approve you before you can post. I'll also include a link to the call recording and a link to the Belly Dance Business Academy and to Lisa's course. And I've also included a link to our Clubhouse feedback form. So if you have any topics that you'd like to learn about or speakers you'd like me to invite or any improvements that I can make, I would love to hear about it. And do mark your calendars for our next call, which is going to be on Friday, November 18th, when we're going to have Zahra Suhera from California talking about the power of the positive dancer. This is based on a workshop that I took with her several years ago, and you are just going to love it. To let you know a little bit about what's going on in the Belly Dance Geek world, we have a little special going on called the Golden Hour. If you're not aware of it, the North American Daylight Savings Time change is coming up this Sunday. And because it's the fallback time, we've got an extra hour being added to our day. And that is the ideal time to start a morning practice. So if you ever wanted to wake up earlier to start practicing in the morning, but you can't stand getting up earlier, this is the one day a year when you don't have to drag yourself out of bed. So to help people get used to that and make the most of it and stick with it, I'm doing 2 weeks of free support over email. So if that's something that you'd like to check out, you can head over to bellydancegeek.com, and there's a link right at the top of the page that you can use to sign up for that. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know anybody who would like to join us, you can invite them to do so at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.